Hello, welcome to another episode of Cloud Security Podcast. First of all, apologies for the sound. This is the AirPods and not my actual mic. We are doing, at the moment, Cloud Security Meetup in London, and this is basically on the day of the recording. I realized that, oh my God, I don't have my podcast mic. So apologies in advance, and I appreciate your patience to bear the not so great audio that I have brought into this particular episode. But I know you'll forgive me because the episode is quite exciting. Even though we had the Cloud Security Meetup in London, which is really successful, we were following that up with Kyla Middleton. She is also known as Cloud Security Chick on the internet and produces a lot of articles on cloud security and automation. And basically, she's been talking a lot of our conferences. I could not wait to bring her on the podcast. And now, since we've had the episode, I can finally share that, yeah, it went live a couple of days ago. And we have the podcast episode ready for you. Basically, we were talking about how do you have scalable security, cloud security in a healthcare environment where you have to be HIPAA compliant. Can you use serverless containers and can you secure them? What is the way to do automation for, or at least network security, IAM security, AWS organization, all that and a lot more, basically with automation Terraform. That's kind of where most of the conversation revolved and how we kind of just demystified the fact that it's not really difficult to do, let's just say, a HIPAA compliant environment to be secured in the modern way as people would like to. So I really appreciate Kyla spending time with us and sharing all the amazing things that she has done and also bringing up the energy. And by the way, I love Kyla also for the fashion sense she has. So you should check out the YouTube video as well for this episode if you want to check out her fashion statement. One more thing I'll call out over here is in this episode, we also spoke about a lot of challenges that are faced by the health industry in terms of not just the identity, but also in terms of identifying what are some of the right opportunities and skill set to be going for. So we answered those questions as well. As always, I hope you find this episode helpful. If you know someone who's trying to implement AWS security in a HIPAA compliant or healthcare industry, definitely share this episode with them. I'm pretty sure they would find this valuable. People who have listened to the YouTube episode already, they have been giving great feedback. So I'm pretty sure you would relate to this, especially if you're already in the space as well. If you have any thoughts on this or would like to talk to us, definitely feel free to reach out on www.cloudsecuritypodcast.tv or feel free to message me on LinkedIn. I always respond to my messages. I'm a bit slow because I'm just traveling at the moment and because we're doing Boston as well next week. So if you are in Boston, I am there on Monday hosting the Boston Cloud Security Meetup, which is the Forward Cloud Security Watch Party, because a lot of us could not get the tickets and we decided to host a watch party for Forward CloudSec, and shout out to Sneak for sponsoring that. We also have a big announcement coming on Monday, which I can tell a lot about on Monday. You would probably be the first few people to hear about it, so definitely keep an ear out on the podcast. And yeah, I am looking forward to sharing more AWS security for the rest of the month of July, and maybe also saying hello and taking pictures with most of you that I get to see at Forward CloudSec, at least the after party, and also at Reinforce, where we will be hosting two events. So if you're there at Reinforce, we're definitely hosting two interviews over there. So definitely find me and maybe even say hello. All right, I'll let you go. Enjoy the rest of the week. And if I don't get to see you in person at Reinforce or Forward CloudSec, enjoy the rest of your week and I will talk to you at the next episode. Peace.
Hello, everyone. Hey, Ashish. Thank you so much for having me.
Not a problem. I'm so glad we could come here and just pump up the energy. But no matter how busy a day you've had, for people who may not know you, what was your journey into cloud security space?
I grew up in Western Nebraska, you know, the tech hub of the United States. No, I grew up very rural, Western Nebraska, farming, driving tractors, doing irrigation, lifting heavy stuff. And when I learned that sitting indoors, playing on computers was a job, I was thrilled. And I haven't worked a day since. So I've just been self-educating. I have a minor in web design. That's the closest I've come to like formal education in this stuff. The rest of it is just playing around, messing around. And I love cloud for that. You can just go do it, which you should do. You should do it. And we'll talk a lot about that, I'm sure. But now I'm a cloud architect, DevOps engineer. I teach, I have a Pluralsight course. I do all sorts of blogs and I'm busy. I need to sleep. I don't think we're going to do this today. I need to go have a nap, I think.
Yeah, you and I both, Kyla. I think we definitely feel like we do too much sometimes, but I'm sure it's one of those ones where when you get that feedback from the community, and I guess once people start coming online and ask their questions as well, you probably realize it, I guess it's a good thing that the far and few people who are creating content are doing the right thing by at least sharing what they're learning. So it helps a lot of people, especially like in healthcare space as well, which I think it's probably looked at by cybersecurity as a space that does not get much attention. And a lot of people have given up as well, thinking, oh, it's just too hard. And I normally would like to sort of start this conversation by just talking about what kind of services, like when people talk about healthcare and lifestyle, what does it really mean? I guess for people who don't even know about the industry and you kind of work, you work in the industry. So what are some of the services that kind of people would see around them that are kind of classified as healthcare?
So healthcare in the United States in particular is one of the regulated industries where if you're touching PCI, which is the payment card industry, so credit card, financial stuff, or if you're touching healthcare information, like this person has diabetes, this person takes this drug, la la la, genetics information, like 3andMe, that kind of stuff is all healthcare data that is stored about you. All of that data that is gathered up through anywhere anymore, if you use MyChart, it's gathering your data. Thankfully, you get a service for it, but that's the cost. And they are aggregating all of that data together and anonymizing it and selling it to researchers. So hopefully it ends up as a good in the end. It's not just selling you widgets on Facebook. It's actually helping figure out which drugs have downsides, which drugs have upsides, and maybe improving healthcare a little bit, just a little bit, because it is a really big, complicated industry. Yeah, just a little. So hopefully that's, you know, part of something that drives me is I got to improve the world a little, just a little.
Yeah, I mean, because if you think about it, everyone kind of has had, unfortunately or fortunately, has had a hospital experience, and like there's all these technology around them. Some people may have tried accessing their own records, like, but you know, like get told off by the doctor for why do you want to look at your own records. But irrespective, it's definitely something that is migrating to the cloud as well, especially for the kind of data that it has, kind of what you were touching on as well. What are some of the examples of why this is regulated? Like what kind of data is in there? Are we talking that makes it such a highly regulated space?
Well, first of all, my daughter is 8.5 months old and already has like a MyChart entry and gets insurance bills. And I have a login for her and we created like a YouTube kids. So like the data that we create these days is from inception, literally when you are conceived and you have your first doctor's appointment, records are created about you that store your healthcare information. Right. I mean, what illnesses you've had, what sicknesses you've had, all of that stuff is stored and aggregated. Devices is hopefully used for good, but also all of the services that nurses use, doctors use that store your healthcare information and make it accessible to down the cost of healthcare, hopefully access that data. And we have to secure it because in the wrong hands, that's your life. That's your healthcare. That's whether you had to take an STD drug at some point, like really invasive stuff. That's really very sensitive. So that's the reason that legislatures watch out for it and protect it. And there's all sorts of audits and laws around protecting that data. And it makes the industry expensive and complicated and scary and really fun and cool for me.
Yeah, well, I think what are some of the security challenges? Considering we're talking about securing this, and I think a lot of this is being digitized these days, to what you said, like your 8-month-old daughter has an insurance. I can't believe it's insurance is that young. And I mean, I guess I get the whole YouTube kids and stuff as well. Like those kind of subscription businesses started for that. Like what kind of challenges do you foresee for people who are trying to, and it doesn't mean, I mean, we'll go into the detail as well, but just at a high level, just like zooming out a bit, just if someone was to tell you about regulated environments, what are some of the obvious security challenges that you would obviously think about? I imagine it kind of crosses over to other industries as well, but what are some of the top three, I mean, maybe top three that comes to mind?
It's storing really sensitive data and making it available to only the services and people that need it, and hopefully never people. Hopefully it's just automation and computers and ETL jobs that sort of transform the data and do something useful with it, like big data analytics, but also preventing that data from leaving or preventing it from leaving in a state where it could identify someone. So packaging it where it's anonymized because it's, you know, aggregated a million people, healthcare records, and 30% of them have blah, blah, gene, stuff like that.
Yep.
I don't know if I'm answering the question exactly.
No, you are. And I think I was kind of hoping you'd probably add HIPAA in there as well. Like, that's kind of like the big one. Because I guess that kind of goes into the whole regulated space. Maybe if you can share what HIPAA is and why is that relevant for the healthcare space?
HIPAA is the most misspelled acronym that I have ever seen in IT, and that is saying something. There's a lot. HIPAA, it's the Healthcare Protection Act, something I'm sure I've missed some of the letters, but it's the federal law that governs the penalties for not meeting HIPAA compliance. So anyone that manages or touches healthcare data in any way needs to be certified and meet compliance regulations in terms of specifics, like you need to encrypt data at rest, you need to encrypt at a certain level when it's in transit, but also process-wise, it governs how your business is built. Like if someone calls on the phone and says, hey, I promise I'm John Smith, can you please email my medical records? No, of course, we need you to prove it. There's 2FA, there's authentication. You need to prove who you are. All that kind of stuff is written into the law and it changes all the time. And we're always doing our best to keep up with it. But yep. Really, it's just good guidelines. Really, hopefully, is the goal is it helps us all get stronger and better. And we keep raising the bar and we keep making ourselves more secure.
Right. And so to your point, then, I guess there's HIPAA, there's this, like if people were to, who are listening to this and going into, okay, I'm in that environment where I'm trying to move into cloud, I'm in the healthcare space, what are some of the building blocks that people would think about when thinking about, say, building a regulated HIPAA compliant infrastructure and application possibly in AWS? What are some of the building blocks for that?
There's so much, and they're all hand in hand, which makes it really hard to get started because you have to build that momentum because it's too many things. Yep. So first of all, the AWS or any cloud provider maintains a list of services that are HIPAA compliant, that meet different regulatory frameworks. That's a very good place to start. At this point, most of the core services do, but when new services are introduced, they often don't meet that stuff yet because, you know, it's in progress or they're still bolting on that security stuff. So make sure that the services and resources you deploy are compliant, because otherwise there isn't a security. There is no way to get there if they're just not compliant. Second of all, in AWS in particular, logs are disabled for everything by default, which is terrible. And it's because they want to charge you a little bit of money to turn it on, just a little bit of money. So for every service, every resource you enable, you need to enable logging. You need to make sure those logs go somewhere that you can get to and you can store them. And you're going to be paying some money for that, but you need to. So making sure your logs are enabled and then aggregating them somewhere useful. Splunk is incredible. Elasticsearch is incredible. There's a lot of services out there that'll help you do this, but log everything everywhere and then read the logs. That'll help you know what's going on in your environment because it's a Hydra. It's lots of people in lots of regions across the entire world can create something that's exposed to the internet in like 2 seconds. And that's new. That used to take a firewall request to a NetOps team. It doesn't anymore. You can deploy it in a minute. Any systems admin can. And that's really powerful, but a little scary. So you gotta look out for that.
And what about from a, I guess, networking perspective? Because I think maybe so like some of these security architects who may be listening into this conversation, they might think of this from more of a structural perspective for building blocks for them. Oh, what are we doing for identity? What are we doing for networking? So maybe if you kind of zoom into a bit more of that, like what are some of the things that you consider from a networking perspective? Because I imagine, like, I don't know if any cloud first health companies, but maybe they do exist. But I imagine most companies out there who are in the healthcare and life science, well, I guess healthcare space technically, they all are primarily legacy. They have a lot of, I guess, on-premise software and stuff that they're already using. So what are some of the things that people might consider from a network security perspective for a regulated environment? And would that be really different to like a normal environment?
Yeah, absolutely, because networking works differently. So in AWS in particular, that's my expertise area, so I'll come back to it a lot.
Perfect. This is the topic as well. So AWS it is.
There's no layer two. There's no broadcasting of MAC addresses. There's nothing. So like, you don't think about what that means, but there's no more HA pairs of ASAs because there's no VRRP, there's no HSRP, there's no layer two failover at all. So you need to find cloud native services that can support failover if you're going to have like a floating IP or you're writing lambdas. And that's a whole new world for network engineers. You're not configuring an ASA pair. You're writing a lambda that's Java that runs every 10 seconds and monitors stuff. And like, that's a whole other world. It's really interesting. But also most of the native services and clouds have lots of options. So there's not just an ASA. There's also the firepower equivalent that's like layer 7 that can read through URLs, that can do SSL decryption. But those services are new to the cloud. They're just not as robust and mature as you'll find in a data center. There's not like big beefy Nexus hosts. There's just like these services that you click a button and it turns on and hopefully it works, but you don't know. And to your point earlier, where everyone is a legacy player, I think that's true. But I think absolutely everyone in every industry is trying to move into cloud because it lets you be really agile and move really fast. And if you don't get there to that agility, that quickness, a startup's going to take your lunch. So even the big players they're scared. They need cloud. They have to have it.
Even in the healthcare space?
Yep, absolutely. The regulation helps to keep little startups out because it takes a lot of money and lawyer time to like get up to compliance, but absolutely. Yep.
Interesting. And to your point about in a specific hybrid example where, say, let's just focus on the majority population of healthcare, which is legacy and has an on-premise, to your point, they hear Kyla over here talk about cloud security because she's a cloud security chick. And like, oh my God, this is amazing. Let's all get into cloud. Now they all got jumped into the cloud, but suddenly it's like, well, we have this on-premise, which we kind of have to hold on to for some time. What would your considerations be for network security from that perspective? Because there's a few models that float around. So I'm curious to know what do you normally recommend from your perspective for healthcare, where it's a regulated environment, what's the pattern that you go for network security?
Keep everything private as much as you can. There's express routes that are private links between your data center and the cloud. And they're just circuits, like you call up a CenturyLink, you call up a circuit provider, and they can provide that for you. And then you don't even need a VPN. It never touches the internet. It's literally like an MPLS style circuit that connects you to the cloud, to AWS. And a lot of services too, you can configure them to stay within your borders, within your VPC, which is your virtual little data center in a box, to never go out to the internet for anything. You can do local DNS, you can do local, a lot of services through endpoints that bolt that service into your VPC. And then you don't really need to worry about a lot of the encryption, a lot of the public exposure, like there's not hackers getting at your stuff. It's within the safe little secure box, which is what you want it to be. That's what you're used to.
Yeah.
With your data center, as there's the big firewalls. And I don't want to scare you, but as you move in to cloud, you can start to move your identity authentication inbound towards the middle. So the old model is there's a data center, there's big walls, there's you know firepower and guns on the borders and barbed wire. And in the middle, once you're in, you know, it's squishy. You can get to everything.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's usually how people start in the cloud. But as you get there, you can move towards a zero trust model of the world, which means you have identities that each service or person owns, and they're only allowed to do the specific stuff that's required. That takes a lot of overhead to build, a lot of automation. I have some Terraform talks about it if you want to learn. But you're able to really secure a lot better in the cloud once you're there. It's scary. You can do a bad job, just like you can in a data center. But you can do a much better job than in a data center once you're there.
Interesting. And I've also seen patterns, or maybe HIPAA, more specific question about HIPAA, because a lot of people may, like what they do with PCI, if you have an application that needs to be PCI compliant, they normally scope it out to say, hey, this is my PCI, this is my VPC, this is my account. This entire account needs to be PCI compliant. Everything else is non-PCI because it's out of the scope, right? So I don't have to worry about that. Is there something similar that's done from a networking perspective for HIPAA as well? But I imagine everything needs to be HIPAA compliant. You can't really go, well, that technically is not really health data because technically everyone's a health data. So is there like boundaries like that that people can consider for HIPAA as well, where they may only have a small portion for HIPAA and not the entire thing?
Absolutely. People talk about the cloud like it's amorphous and it's one thing, but really like AWS is VPCs, which is a little network, like a /16 mm-hmm. is pretty common. And you can have 50 of them if you want. So imagine 50 data centers and you connect them however you want or not. I see some PCI or HIPAA compliant places have different VPNs and you connect to the PCI compliant VPN and that's the three VPCs over here, or the, you know, non-PCI, that's the other 47. So you can bridge them and use filtering, use all sorts of cool security tech or not.
Yep, cool. So that's good to know. At least you can actually separate them out as well. What about, I mean, I guess if you were to kind of, you touched on the identity piece just a bit earlier as well. What's your thoughts on identity for a HIPAA compliant or HIPAA regulated environment?
IAM is everything, particularly in AWS. I don't want to knock AWS because IAM is really powerful, but it's JSON files. It's flat JSON that's hard to like, it's great for computers, but it's hard for people, for humans to parse. What actions do you need? What things are missing when it doesn't break? It's kind of not very intuitive to figure it out. So when I'm talking about identity, if you're not familiar with that, there's roles, users, policies in AWS. And a role is an identity, a principle that like a host owns or a service or a human owns. And that's who you are. So you've proven who you are. And then your authorization is the stuff you're allowed to do, which is the policies that are attached to it. And within AWS or within a cloud, you are able to do only the stuff that you are granted the right to do. And that applies to your resources too, your machines, your programs, which is really powerful. You can tell your automation scripts that they're only allowed to touch the resources that they're supposed to, and they have nothing else. And there's just not really a corollary for that in data centers. I know Active Directory does some cool stuff. You can do filtering rules. There's nothing as powerful as IAM in the cloud. It's very, very powerful for regulations and really just for general security. Because the goal is not to hit the compliance check mark. The goal is don't get hacked. Or if you do, limit the scope.
Fair. And pretty good practice as well. We kind of started off with the conversation, and to your point, I just definitely believe identity is probably the main piece in the whole thing. Well, because once you have the identity access, you basically like you're in. Like if the more permission you have, the more screwed up situation you're in when that identity information is lost, I guess. From a application building perspective, you kind of mentioned the fact that every business out there is excited about cloud, wants to move into cloud because they realize it's the start of eating their lunch. Another important aspect for the whole space of cloud as we know it is CI/CD pipelines as well. And I normally, there's multiple ways to carve this out, but what are some of the security considerations you have for CI/CD pipelines that are being used in a healthcare regulated environment?
I love automation. So CI/CD pipelines, it's any way to deploy code generally driven through like a Git server. So like a GitHub or an Azure DevOps or a Jenkins where code is stored and then it is processed to deploy somehow. It's built, it's pushed, it's whatever. I think it's so powerful because when you are doing stuff manually, you have to know all the steps. You have to be the expert that knows I'm going to run TFLint, I'm going to Terra test, I'm going to validate. If you can automate it, if you can write a pipeline that does it, you just need one expert one time to write all the steps out, and then you can run it 1,000 times. Some of the code that I've written is run hundreds of times a day, and it does all sorts of smart stuff. And I just have my feet kicked up. I don't even see it. I love that. It's so powerful. So in the healthcare space in particular, authentication and authorization is really important. So it all comes back to identity. When you require 2FA, which is a requirement for HIPAA, how do you have an automation server that runs every 5 seconds, get a 2FA prompt and hit approve? You can't. You need an exception or you need an alternate method for it to prove itself really strongly who it is. That it's not someone else doing something malicious. It's actually this thing that you've authorized. And that can be challenging. There's some services like OIDC that allow specific branches, specific services to run and no other service. So it kind of passes metadata along with I'm trying to do something and this is who I am and this is my attributes. That really helps. That really helps lock down who you are specifically. And earlier today, I just posted on Medium about this. You could have a Kubernetes cluster pod launch, and it can assume an IAM role, assume an identity in AWS. Only the service account assigned to that pod can assume the role and do the thing, and everybody else fails, even if it's in the same cluster, which is good because
Interesting.
trust no one. Always be looking over your shoulder. Lock that everything down.
Wait, so to your point then about the authorization and authentication, one of the things that is quite common, well, it shouldn't be, but it is, that CI/CD gets a lot of permission. Like, you know, least privilege kind of goes out of the window where it's one CI/CD pipeline, which is kind of what a lot of people recommend. It has a lot of permission. It has access to dev, prod, test, every environment as well. So probably the more powerful your CI/CD and more, I guess, well, not more, but less number of CI/CDs makes it even more exposed for lack of a better word, for such scenarios, where do you stand the whole one CI/CD for infrastructure, one CI/CD for application, or one CI/CD for the entire application, including infrastructure, application, everything else? Because, I mean, you're a massive Terraform fan. People who might go through your Medium page would realize that. So coming from a Terraform world, I imagine most people over here were using some kind of automation. They could be using something from their Amazon provider, like a CloudFormation template or CLI or whatever. Where do you stand on the whole CI/CD pipeline? Because I saw, obviously, one application. Most people may have 30, 40, 300 applications. So what are your thoughts on the whole CI/CD, or at least the number of CI/CDs for this?
So in the old days, you needed a new server for your app. So you submitted a ticket and someone wrote a PO and they ordered it. And 6 weeks later, it arrived in a box. And anymore, that's not how it works. You deploy a server in 2 minutes. You deploy your app in another 3. It's incredible. The way that this tends to work when people first get started is there is a Terraform repo and it links up with, you know, you have to have your application repo because someone is building your application somehow.
Yep.
And you have them separate and you have maybe the Terraform call the app. So if you need a new server, you say Terraform build it, and then Terraform does what's called a webhook or a post or something to trigger the other app pipeline to deploy your app to the new server. Yep. That's really common. That's okay. But as we develop infrastructure as code, what Terraform does, CloudFormation, ARM, we start to see the application and the infrastructure grow together because they are the same thing. They are both code now, and just we are bound to put them together. So I think as we develop, like if you're new to this, just start learning it that way, because that's where we're going to be in 6 months, where mm-hmm. infrastructure is the application. You see this really commonly with containers or serverless. Like if you have a Lambda and you're developing that and you want to deploy your new app, it doesn't make sense to package the app and then give it to Terraform and then Terraform builds. Like just have one pipeline do one thing and package it and deploy it. And it takes much less time. It's less complexity. So I think they'll grow together. I think they are.
So have two. So one for infrastructure, one for application. Or just have one for both.
I think that's the way that it used to be. I think the way that we're going to be in 6 months that everyone's going to do is one, because everything's going to be built together and deployed together.
So if I have 30 applications, one CI/CD for 30, or 30 CI/CD for 30 applications?
I would think 30, but it starts to be how your application is architected. Do you want to have 30 different pipelines run? And that problem is not as scary as it seems, because you can set mm-hmm. automated triggers. I built something like a year ago that when one pipeline is merged, because you change code in one path, it runs like 50 pipelines. And who cares? Because like, I'm not doing that manually. My feet are kicked up. So it depends on how you want to build it. I don't think there's really a huge pro con. I don't want to take an aggressive stance. They're equivalent. As we scale out, as scaling out gets easier, who cares if it's 5 or if it's 50? Because I'm not running them. They're running automatically.
Actually, that's a good point, Kyla. Because I think, to your point, a lot of times when these conversations are had, a lot of people take a strong stand toward multiple. Sorry, and sometimes the opposite, just because of the use case they may have the architecture. So it's so complex. Because I guess we're talking about a scenario where people are using IACs. I don't know if every organization out there is even DevOps to begin with. Automation is like, right, this is a priority number two, because they have to have the Agile and DevOps box ticked off before they can go into automation, before they can even think about IAC. So maybe for people who may not be using IAC, I think, and maybe manually doing things, I don't know why they would do it, but if they were doing it manually, would these challenges be a lot more harder, I imagine? Like the ClickOps world, as I like to call it, it's not easy. Because I mean, how important is culture as well for this? Because there's a lot of moving elements here, and I'm trying to kind of summarize into one, but I definitely find that in a world where there is no DevOps, there is no IAC, the challenges that we spoke about from a network perspective, from an identity perspective, from CI/CD, there would not be a CI/CD, hopefully, if you're not IOC, but how different would that world be? Like, I imagine, what was your challenge before the whole DevOps and every world kind of came in? Because I imagine you've been in the space for a while. So thoughts on
I have.
I think
culture is everything. Like a third of my RSA talk a month ago with Saiji, who was on this podcast earlier, was just on the power and the importance of culture. So as an example, when you start to do infrastructure as code, it's code that you commit somewhere and people review it. And they're judging your code. And it can feel like they're judging you. Why did you do this? Can feel like you're stupid and you shouldn't be here. And that's really hard. You have to get over that in your own heart and with your team to know that it gets called blameless culture a lot, that if something has happened that's wrong, that you know, you broke something, you committed code that was wrong, your team needs to support you and figure out why it was permitted. What process allowed it? Did someone approve that shouldn't have? It's not just you. You didn't just do it alone. Your team collectively did it. And that's the point of DevOps. That's the point of automation, is it's your collective aggregated smarts together. And if something falls through the cracks, that's everybody's fault. And you all need to work together to fix it. And I don't know if I answered the question, but I love talking about
it. No, you kind of did. I think culture definitely is a huge part, but maybe from a technical perspective as well, do you reckon, I imagine in my mind, when in a traditional environment, these things would take a long time, right? I think just the whole CI/CD, DevOps and everything. So culture definitely ticked off. From a technical aspect as well, how long were the projects? I've only done an identity project for a healthcare department. And I remember the plane, because you know, when in the cloud world, people talk about 6 months. Oh, 6 months too long. I can do this in 1 month or 2 months because I've got so much automation. I imagine these used to, at least the identity project that we were going to work on for a hospital, that was going to take us a year. And this is just one tiny hospital in Victoria, right? So I imagine it was that's the case that used to be for deployment before the whole DevOps and cloud world came in. Would that be an accurate picture of what it used to be?
Absolutely. And it's so hard to do it right every time. And that's what you want, right? When you do a deployment, when you build a resource, you want it to be built correctly. And that's so much easier said than done. Anyone who's ever clicked like new instance for an EC2 instance in AWS, it asks you like 15 questions that are esoteric and like you've never heard of half of those words before. And if you do it wrong, your server doesn't work. And that's a problem. Like if you have three experts that are building your servers, they're going to get it right 99% of the time. But if you have 25 people or 100 developers that are deploying servers, they're going to get it wrong like 30% of the time. And then you need to go and figure out and fix it. And that tax is something that you get rid of with automation. And it's expensive. It's time consuming. You have to train your whole team to use Git, to build pipelines, to understand all this silly automation stuff. But that's the tax that you're attacking, is stuff went wrong 30% of the time, something broke because you deployed 50 resources to support this app. A couple of them are wrong, or logging's turned off, or they're deployed insecurely, or that's risk to your business, that's risk to your technical uptime. Your CIA is under attack by that tax, and automation fixes it. Automation can help a lot.
Fair enough. And to your point about automation, maybe even at an account level as well, from an AWS perspective, is there a lot of automation done there as well in that space? Because I imagine there's like, you know, the whole AWS organization, SCP and all that, like those kind of, how are they different for a regulated, regulated healthcare department or environment?
An SCP or a service control policy is a part of the AWS organization suite of tools. And it is fences that you can put in that says, when you create a server, it has to be this size. When you deploy an instance, it has to be private. It has to be internal. And remember how anyone in your org can deploy something that's public and uses password for the password. You can say, just don't permit public or turn it off for 5 minutes so someone can deploy something that has gotten permission. It's really powerful, but it can also be kind of scary because there's no log only mode. It's just enforced immediately, which really scares me because like, what if I do it wrong? And the answer for most of that in cloud is just have multiple data centers, just have multiple VPCs. There's a dev and stage and prod and you roll your code forward and your infrastructure, your SCPs, your application, everything's code. So just start it in dev and test it. And if it doesn't work, fix it before you roll it forward. So there's not just one data center now, you're gonna have 50 and you just need automation to keep track of it. That's cloud, get ready.
and I think to what you have been saying, and I'll probably repeat this at this point in time, it sounds scary, but it's not, isn't it? Once you start walking the path.
Incredibly cool. And it can be scary. And there's some boundary keeping. Like, go to Stack Exchange and say, hey, how do you use Terraform? And people are going to say, you need to go get another job. How could, and that stuff drives me crazy because I don't have an education in this. I learned reading internet articles and messing around. And I publish a ton of stuff on my Medium that's just really easy to get to. I call it the Let's Do DevOps series. That's really simple language. It doesn't assume you know anything. I try to find and share resources like that, where if you don't know anything at all and you're terrified, you're shaking in your cowboy boots, like I was when I first started before I got fashion, you can go figure it out. You can go do it, because that's really powerful. Yeah. And I know I keep not answering your question. Technically, when you get started, start running Terraform from your computer in a dev account that's not anything prod. Personal sandbox, start figuring out how it works. Terraform is definitely where I would start with. ARM and CloudFormation have benefits, but Terraform is everything everywhere now. It's huge. Go do it. It's awesome.
I'm being trying to drop the mic over there and walk away, Kyla.
And I have example pipelines for everything, for AWS, for Azure. If you want pipelines that will deploy your code and walkthroughs of how to deploy them, I have all that on Medium. It's all GitHub code that I've shared publicly for free. So you can just go steal it, borrow it, take it, modify it, do whatever you want, build cool stuff.
I would definitely share that link in the show notes as well. And I think maybe one theme that I'm taking from this, right? I think people may be listening into this conversation or may have come with a preconceived notion that actually Kyla is going to talk about all the challenges she's having in trying to deploy security in a HIPAA compliant environment. But we've been talking for almost 40 minutes now. And I think it's really interesting. The theme is very similar, where it's automation and automation that scales. And then there is like IAM take care of, like most of the recommendations that you've made are very similar to what anyone else would make from any of that environment. Almost sounds like you're talking about letting security drive compliance instead of compliance drive security. Does that make sense? Like, I think, am I getting this right as a team?
Absolutely. Because the goal is not to pass your audits. You need to. You should pass your audits. Do that. But the goal is to be as secure as possible while still being just incredibly agile. And you can do that with cloud. You have to research, you have to learn, but you can do it. And this is fun. I get to talk and it sounds like I'm an AWS expert and I know all the cert, and I don't. I know I'm like in the bottom half of the room of your viewers right now. But I can Google, I can read all the Terraform documentation, I can read all the AWS documentation. And if you do that, you're an expert. You can do it because there's so much depth and breadth to cloud. And so if you learn how to do it, you build it yourself, you can teach your team how to do it too. And that makes you valuable and improves your team too. And I that's all I talk about is culture and attitude and just going in chutzpah, you know, like just go do it, because that's all I ever did. That's all I have ever done. And it's worked really well, and you should do it too.
Interesting. Wait, isn't that a Jewish word, chutzpah?
It is. I'm not Jewish. I just love their words. They're fun to say.
I love that as well, because it's a similar word in the Indian language, Hindi, which means exactly the same thing. It sounds very much similar. It's like, it's called Jaspa, but, and it sounds similar to Kuspa, I think they're called it, like from the epiglottis, but I can't do that. It's definitely, there you go. Steven just mentioned the same thing as well. Yes, let's please make compliance a side effect of great security. 100% of the money. I think that's pretty much the theme over here. Thanks for that, Steven. We've spoken about a lot of things about identity, network. We've spoken about like the CI/CD pipeline as well. And we've defined at an account level, what do we need to do? Now, with the theme of automation and it kind of stands today, we obviously kind of have to think about the elephant in the room these days, which is containers and serverless, which you kind of touched on earlier about serverless comparison. I definitely find that, before I kind of dig into the question, is it okay to use container serverless in a HIPAA compliant environment? Is that even possible?
Yeah, absolutely. And I love it. I think it's even better. So for anyone that isn't aware, let's catch them up. So in the olden days, you have a VM, you deploy your application on it. It's long lived. You keep it forever. You name it Frank or Steve or Jedi or whatever, January, whatever you want. And you get to know its idiosyncrasies because it's long lived. That is your pet. versus your cattle in the serverless container world, where if your container does something wrong, that's a cattle and you just shoot your cattle. And that's an unfortunate metaphor, but that's how containers and serverless work. You don't have long-lived compute. If something goes wrong, you destroy it and you redeploy it from scratch. You have all of it in automation. And it's really powerful when you build stuff like that. It takes a lot of time, you know, all of those installing like Java and Chrome and Notepad and everything you needed on your server that's really annoying to do. But once you get there, you can iterate really rapidly. Some of the CI/CD builders I've built, we rebuild them every day and deploy them every day. And you just have unit testing that says like, does it still work? Cool, send it live. As much as you can automate, you're patching faster than a human can keep up with across a huge scale, a huge fleet. And that's awesome. In terms of HIPAA compliance, absolutely. Kubernetes is interesting here. In serverless, in containers, generally they have an IP, at least when they're live, serverless, just when it's live. And you can scan it. You can use your security tools to analyze it statically as code or when it's running and see like, is it secure? Is it doing what I expect? Is someone hacking it? In Kubernetes, you generally don't. There's an overlay network that's just within the Kubernetes, you know, nonsense box, and it's hard to scan. You need tools that are specifically built for that to get to it. Kubernetes is the Lamborghini of services. It does everything. And if it breaks, like you better fly to Italy to get the part because it's expensive. But it's really powerful and you're going to see it everywhere. If you haven't in your environment yet, get ready because it's coming. Yeah. So maybe you can be that guy, be that girl, be that them. Take care of it. Learn Kubernetes because it's coming.
And to your point then, obviously to your point, 100% agree. Patching is just not a problem when it's a cattle versus a pet that you're dealing with. I didn't realize you get an IP for serverless and you can scan it when it's running live. You kind of mentioned that. How does that work?
Absolutely. So serverless is just code that you hand off and that's it. And there you go, AWS, run my code. But generally it's run many times over for atomic workloads. So like when you go to Twitter and you upload a picture and your picture's too big, right? You didn't scale it to the exact size. It needs to do this really rapid rescaling and send you back the other one. And that's a really classic example of serverless because it doesn't need to retain any data. It can just spin up and run and send it back. So generally, because it has to send, it has to have an IO, it has to have an IP that it can connect to. And it's not very common to scan serverless when it's up unless they're long-lived jobs. So like the Twitter photo reset, that's like 1 second. There's not enough time to scan it. But if it's running all of your services, like Netflix and Google have a lot of containers and serverless services that are long-lived, you got to scan them. You got to find out what's going on.
Is that because it's a HIPAA requirement for it to be scanned? Is that why you folks are scanning it?
No, it's just a security. Security should drive compliance, Steven said. I love that. Canine security, Steven.
Because one of the examples that people talk about is like the fact that you can't install antivirus on a container or a serverless. And most compliance standards require you to have an antivirus or a compliance. Like I think in certain scenarios, I still feel antiviruses make sense. Like I think I was doing this work for a particular company as a CISO, and one of the things that we used to have as a problem is basically it was like a, what do you call it, like a document upload site. Now you could be a hacker uploading a virus onto our site, so it had to be scanned by antivirus, right? So like with containers and Lambdas, there's no antivirus, right? Unless I'm missing the picture here, there's no antivirus there, so that's okay with HIPAA.
There generally is scanning. There's not always antivirus in the traditional sense. So if you're used to VMs, you just have an installable package that scans the files and keeps track of that. In containers, you share the kernel. And that's interesting. If you don't understand that, read the Wikipedia. It has tons of good info. But because you're sharing the kernel, you can often have antivirus that exists outside the container that is looking inward, that has transparency and can X-ray the container in. So you don't often need to have antivirus within the container. And there's also other services that can scan it live, scan it as it's running. However, there's a different model that's really similar. When you're deploying stuff like in Kubernetes in particular, you can have sidecar containers that sit within the same virtual networks, the overlay networks, and just be an implant that's controlled that does network style scanning, but also has really deep and powerful connections to the hosts that are doing the data ETLs that are doing all the touching. So it can reach into those containers that are live and scan them and mess around with stuff and shut down services if it needs to. So it's basically like an antivirus octopus. Yeah, if no one's registered that business name yet, that's a good one.
Yeah.
And it just gets in there and it can secure your containers when they're live. But you get the opportunity to like hit them at multiple points. So you're writing containers as code, so you can scan them when they're static. And then you're blowing them up. You're running them kind of the same way the antiviruses scan viruses. You execute it in a little box and you can see how it works and see if it runs.
And okay, that's this interesting point then. So from your perspective, for people who are listening to this, because we have a lot of security managers and tech leads and stuff listening to this conversation as well. Often they would say, listen to someone on the podcast, like, Kyla sounds amazing. She's spoken about all these amazing things and I'm ready to start today. Like, what do I need to do? So I guess the question that I get from them quite often is around the team skill set. Like what should ideally, and obviously I can understand this is different by application. There's a lot more complexity, but in general, what would you say is a minimum skill set you would think that people would have in teams that are trying to automate a lot of stuff?
So
especially in a HIPAA environment, I guess, yeah.
I'll try to focus it on HIPAA, but really it's general because everything is. You need a foundational knowledge, just like in a data center, there's still IPs, there's still firewalls, there's NAT, there's all of the things that you're used to, compute and RAM and memory, and Prometheus is monitoring your host. All that still applies. Cloud is infrastructure that's flexible and dynamic, but it's still infrastructure. There's servers, there's firewalls, there's stuff you're used to. And what was the rest of the question? I got too excited.
No, that's totally fine. I think it was more the skill set that's required in, yeah.
I have a non-answer that I really like because it's tricky. Getting used to not knowing the answer. When you're a network engineer and you've been working on Nexus boxes for 15 years, you know exactly how the CAM table works and the buffers and how to do an SFTP transfer. In AWS, there's like 14 ways to run containers or something like that because they invent a new one each 6 months. So as that stuff evolves, because it is constantly being updated, that's one of the cool things you get by paying a little bit extra for cloud is there are new services and new features to existing services that are literally coming out every single day. So get plugged in to those service announcements. Figure out what is happening, what is coming, because you might be able to use it. And that agility, that speed, that's what gives you an advantage in crowded marketplaces or in blue ocean marketplaces.
Cool. And I guess the final question on this, and from a technical perspective, where can people learn about this kind of stuff as well? To your point, you mentioned when you try and go online and what was it, Secure Stack or Stack Exchange or whatever you might have, maybe Stack Overflow.
Yes, although it's an example of it's a bad example because they will tell you you're dumb and like that's not helpful for anyone.
Yeah, but I guess there are people asking questions around like how do I scale security, and there might be genuine people out there, but where do people go and learn about this? And maybe what was your experience of learning how to scale security in a HIPAA compliant way? Was there any documentation or any resources that you came across that were really helpful?
Security is a hard thing to define because security is just knowing how stuff works really well. Yeah. And so when you want to learn security, really you want to learn what your topic subject matter is. So you need to read the docs. You need to deploy it yourself. Me personally, I am plugged into a bunch of newsletters that are really excellent. I hope you don't ask me the names because I don't remember any of them. But something I find really useful is reading the like AWS API pages or reading the AWS Terraform provider resource pages because they're really simple. You're not going to get 10,000 words on how something works. You're just getting all the flags and you can kind of interpret, you can derive what this thing does and the important decision points that you're going to have to make. Because those pages will say, this is required, these three are optional, turn them on if you want. That's really, I love the cliff notes-y nature of it. And then you can go do it. There's probably a lot of resources. I've written a Pluralsight page. I have a Medium blog. There's tons of good information just on Google away. But really in cloud, the power is do it. Go deploy it. Figure out how it works. Click the buttons. Break it six ways. But do it in a sandbox. Don't do it in prod. And go build it.
Awesome. Thank you so much for sharing that. And that's kind of like most of the technical question that I had. I've got three more questions, but they're like totally non-technical. Just for folks to get to know you a bit more. It's also called the fun section of the podcast as well. Yes.
Cool.
And we're all about getting fun, having some fun at least. So the first question that I have is, what do you spend most time on when you're not working on cloud or technology?
I used to be a rock climber in a past life when I had free time. Right now, I have an 8.5 month old who's adorable, Kennedy Rose. She's so cute. She mostly sleeps through the night, except for last night. She knew I was coming on, I think. And she's amazing. But when I get back to it, it's going to be concerts and 5Ks and rock climbing. It's my favorite things to
Oh.
do. I have seen a ton of techies in rock climbing too. I think it's something to do with the problem-solving nature. Like, it's very analytical.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'd be you should do a survey of your listeners. I'd be
I would
curious.
definitely should do that because I think I one survey that I came across is definitely a lot of ex-military folks are in cybersecurity. And like a lot. It's just like if you kind of just do a general stat, somewhere someone had served for their country. And but I guess I can appreciate why that's that blue team kind of mentality comes in from that exact same thing. You're trying to protect the company from all the bad people or whatever. So maybe that's kind of where it comes from. But that I've definitely done that. I think I should definitely done one for rock climbing because I know a few people who I'm pretty sure into rock climbing as well. So for the next question, what is something that you're proud of but is not on your social media?
Ooh, that's a good one. Over the COVID pandemic, I was going crazy, like all of us, sitting at home watching The Office for the fifth time. And I decided to rewire the house. So I redid all of the electrical in my lower
Yourself.
floor myself. I just, I know a little bit about electricity, enough to not get electrocuted. And I was like, let's just do it. Let's just, I'm kind of a confident person. I don't you I'm sure you can't pick that up here. So I just went and did it, and I redid the plumbing in the basement. I replaced all sorts of stuff and all the light fixtures just for fun.
Wait, are you
Yeah.
certified in this, or did you just like?
No. I didn't get electrocuted. I'm still here. So
That's the
kind of
plus. That is definitely a
no one should
plus.
pay me for the work that I've done, because you do it just like the cloud, you do it wrong a couple times, then you learn how to do it right. It was a lot of fun, and I survived. We all just have to survive the COVID, and then we'll, still be here when it's gone one day.
One day for sure. And thanks for sharing that story as well. So, final question, what's your favorite cuisine or restaurant that you can share?
Oh, I'm really easy. Like, I love my ramen. Favorite cuisine. I went to an Ethiopian restaurant a couple of years ago, and they have this sort of bubbly light bread that you tear off and you sort of
Injera.
scoop the food up. Thank you. Yes, I'm terrible with names. It was incredible, and I moved here to follow my partner around, and I miss it all the time. It was so good. I love to eat food that is too spicy for me, and then I just am sweating and feel terrible, but it's so good. It's very addictive.
Did you have the food in the a plate maybe you shared with your partner as well? I think at least the one that they serve in Melbourne, it's like everyone on the table gets one big ass plate. And the injera bread is just spread across it, like massive injera bread, and just like all these different, well, I guess some curries and some like solid, I guess not curried versions of food, I guess. But is that what, how you guys get it served, or at least when you were having it?
Yeah, it was
There you go.
family style, which is the USA way of saying it. But yeah, it was just in the middle, and I brought my mom, who's maybe listening. Hi, mom, if you're there. And she was not a fan, and we went to McDonald's on the way home afterwards so she could have dinner. Sorry, mom.
Yeah, it's not for everyone. I can respect that about your mom as well, but it's definitely something an acquired taste as well, because it's such a different cultural experience as well to go through that. You know, it's like I think it's funny. Sometimes we talk about this, and my friends call it like the prison mode, like where people just like have their hand in front of the plate, and it's like it's my plate, my food, and it's almost like that. But this is almost like no, it's one big plate for the entire family, and everyone shares it. So everyone is actively making a choice for, am I eating too much? Or is there enough for like the spouse or whoever is on the table with them? So I think it's definitely great. I love it. And we've had a couple of, I think we have had one Ethiopian guest in the past as well. So I got to learn a lot about Ethiopian food around that point. So that was kind of like the episode. And thank you so much for participating in it as well. For folks who want to get in touch with you, where can they find you, connect with you, and know more about the whole regulated space, automation, and all the other awesome stuff you talk about as Cloud Security Check Online.
I have so many places to find me. I decided to make a bookmarking site that just has it a click away for me more than anyone else. Tyler.omg.lol is the hilariously named website that you can find me at.
And I'll add that to the show notes as well. But thank you so much for doing this. I really appreciate this. And thank you everyone for joining in. And shout out to Stephen for dropping a question as well, or dropping a comment as well. Thank you so much. And Kyla, I'm looking forward to having you again. I think we had a great, I personally enjoyed my conversation with you. So I'm looking forward to seeing what else we can talk about in the future as well. Hopefully you're excited as well.
Yes, I am. That sounds lovely. Thank you, everyone. And thank you so much for having me.
No problem. All right. See everyone. See ya. Peace.
If you have been enjoying your weekly cloud security news, search for cloud security news on your favorite podcast platform and subscribe. Leave us a review if you are loving what we're doing, and do share it with someone who you think will get value from this. This has been your cloud security news for this week. Thank you for listening.